Episode 115 of Outlander Cast is brought to you by Simple Contacts. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/outlandercast or enter OutlanderCast at checkout.
Frank, I've been so horrid.
No, forget all about that. This is all that truly matters now.
Where'd you get the red hair?
All the way from Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars. Hello, everyone, and welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I forgot how much I freaking love this episode.
Right?
Oh my goodness gracious.
It's just so good. It is such a good episode.
I had to rewatch it like twice, maybe three times in preparation for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And each time it got better and better and better, and it just reminded me of how
like
excited.
Like a fine wine.
Yeah, it reminded me of how excited I was when we watched the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was like, wow, we are getting off on the right foot here. Like this is big boy TV.
It is.
This is big boy TV.
Oh my goodness. Well, a lot of us have been struggling in Droughtlander, possibly doing rewatches ourselves. And so this is a perfect episode if you have recently started season 3 again and wanted to dive deeper into this episode. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, what do you remember from your experience of the Battle Join? Do you love it as much as I do?
Oh my gosh, yes. Well, yeah. I remember first seeing it for the first time, sitting on the edge of my seat the entire episode.
Right.
One of the things that I didn't like, actually that last sentence in the clip that you played in the beginning of this episode, I was like, really? You had to throw that in?
Right.
Sam Heughan in this episode took my breath away, right, as his breath was taken many a times.
With the Adam's apple.
Oh, the Adam's apple. Yes. How about you?
I loved this episode. And in fact, I remember being a little uncomfortable with that last sentence as well.
Mm-hmm.
But as I did my in-depth study of this episode, it became more and more clear to me that it needed to be put in there. And we'll get into why later on.
Yeah.
But I love doing these kinds of episodes. And I love getting down into the deep, dirty muck of it and, discussing certain themes or how things are written or how they are directed, caught, captured, whatever, whatever you want to talk about it. I love getting down and dirty into these deep studies. So I think now, we can really get to the middle of it.
Well, as you said, so we've done two previous episodes of like this, two really in-depth studies, one for Sassenach, yep, and one for Both Sides Now. We talked about how in those episodes, those episodes themselves, how they functioned in Outlander as a whole.
Right.
So Sassenach, for example, showed what it took to introduce a show, new characters, new venues, Scotland, and all of the rest of its components. For Both Sides Now, it showed how to build on the start of that show's mythology, with specific moments that really formed the foundation for the rest of this story. Right. And it's actually really good fortune that almost everyone in the Outlander cast clan gathering voted for the battle joined, because this is just really a natural follow-up for the previous two episodes that we talked about, because it begins the conclusion of the characters with that natural arc that began all the way back in Sassenach.
Right, right. And that's why I really, truly love this episode. But the funny thing is, as fortuitous, you know, as that may be, as fortuitous as everybody voting for the battle joined may be, the real fortune I feel like came as I read my notes from when I originally watched it, and then I rewatched the episode again and again, and I reread my notes, made more notes, and then I had realized I had the benefit of watching Star Wars: The Last Jedi, and I kept seeing similarities between the battle joined and The Last Jedi, and how those two properties share the similarities and actually similar functions, but how also The Last Jedi and the battle joined, how they actually kind of enlighten and inform each other in a real way, in an odd way. I mean, because like while the battle joined and The Last Jedi were tasked with these jobs of like tying up loose ends from previous works or previous seasons and then creating new threads to carry us through the rest of the season or through the rest of the films. But, and of course they looked gorgeous as always, both of them. I realized that wasn't necessarily their primary function. Do you know what I mean? Like they're both of them are perfectly paced, quiet, tense returns to action for each of their respective brands, agreed, in my opinion. And they both allowed their stories to take a step back, breathe, and I think the primary function was to force the viewer to let go of everything that had come before.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
You know, to move on. Which is funny because in my estimation, for the most part, Outlander is usually way more than happy to burn through plot as fast as it can. To get to the next dazzling set piece, you know, or
limited amount of episodes.
Right. Or that bullet point from Diana's books that every reader must have. You know what I mean? So I think the object here was to get things to move forward.
Yeah, well, I think Ron was very well aware of how radical, you know, season three as a whole was going to be.
Right.
You know, if he tried to keep Outlander the show in its infancy, there was going to be absolutely no way we as an audience are going to be able to grow with that story.
Right. There was he couldn't keep it the way that it was.
No. So he had to do things differently, and he had to make this episode really special.
Right. And my take on it was, I think what he did was he essentially cashed all his chips in by leveraging, you know, what we call like good faith.
What do you mean?
Like emotional equity.
Okay.
You know, we have invested in
these
characters.
We love these characters.
Right. So I think he cashed in on that. And he cashed in on it, something that he built for many seasons, by rooting his story in a deliberately calm season premiere. I think that finds its purpose in being a fundamental exercise in emotion and surprising releases.
Hashtag all the feels.
So I think that's what this episode is going to be about for you and I.
Me?
This episode. Yeah, like this. not like us, but like for Outlander
the collective
cast.
Us. Okay. You know,
this episode for the battle joint, the in-depth study.
This podcast episode?
Is going to be the function that we've discovered, in my opinion, is letting go and being an exercise in emotion. So, I mean, why don't we just get to it? Let's take a deep dive into what I think three scenes where Ron finally finds his roots with the audience's emotion, why we are forced to let go of everything that has come before, and discuss why, as I rewatched The Battle Joined, really, honestly, it was weird that I kept thinking of The Battle Joined. Are you ready to do that, my darling?
Yes.
All right, let's get to it. We'll be right back. All right, so season 3 premiere, episode 301, The Battle Joined, directed by Brendan Mayer and written by Ron D. Moore himself. Actually, the only episode that Ron has a writing credit for in Outlander, as a matter of fact. And the funny thing is, too, the previous two episodes that we have done, Ron Moore was the writer for those episodes as well.
Wait, do you mean the only one he's had a writing credit for in season 3?
Correct, in season 3.
Sorry, you said it's only his Outlander, and I was like, that doesn't make sense.
Oh, sorry, season 3, yes.
Okay.
So yeah, and the other two in-depth episodes that we've done were actually written by Ron Moore, too. So I think it's a great fit.
Yes.
So what did we do? I mean, what did Ron do? I mean, I think not only did he exploit the emotions that we as viewers have tied to our characters, which, again, we painstakingly built over 3 or 4 years, but he did it with ease by using a very simple tool that he has at his disposal, a writing tool, allowing the characters to experience conflict between two diametrically opposed emotions at any given moment, such as being in a literal battle in Culloden, like Jamie, or a figurative one, like Frank, laying wide awake on a couch in a deafeningly quiet room, family room, with nothing but dread, anger, and probably just a pang of jealousy.
Oh, just a pang. Just a pang.
But before we go any further, yes, let's just get the Last Jedi thing in Outlander.
Yeah.
Out of the way.
Please.
I did put those two things in the same sentence, and you're probably going, really, Blake?
We know you love Star Wars, Blake. I love Star Wars too, but land the plane, Helen.
It did happen. I promise it's for a good reason. Now, I know there are a bunch of people who loved The Last Jedi, and there are a bunch of them who hated The Last Jedi. And in fact, I think it's probably the most controversial Star Wars episode that has been made.
Probably, oh my God.
Probably since The Phantom Menace. Ugh. Either way. But when I look at it, The Last Jedi was very special. Rian Johnson, who directed it, he did something really special. What it did was push forward a franchise in Star Wars that has since done nothing in its entire history but keep looking back at itself. It keeps referencing its own mythology. And it was getting, in my opinion, probably a little stale. So when it comes to that film, and one of my favorite scenes that Rian Johnson both wrote and directed, he actually offered a bit of meta-commentary on Star Wars itself when he had Kylo Ren say the following.
Let the past die. Kill it if you have to. That's the only way to become what you were meant to be.
Okay. Now, without spoilers,
let the past die. Kill it.
It's pretty evident on what is happening here. Kylo Ren telling Rey to let go. Stop holding on to all these constructs. It's the only way you can become what you need to be going forward. And in the film, that's what happens. That's what they do. So, again, without any spoilers, both Rey and Kylo Ren change the entire landscape of Star Wars with one simple flick of Kylo Ren's fingers. It's unexpected, and in my opinion, as it happens, it's breathtaking. So, which brings me to Outlander, because after The Battle Joined, Outlander's entire landscape is also changed forever.
Okay, so timeline, of course.
Yep.
1745.
Yep, the rebellion.
Yeah. Gone are the Highlanders. I'm so sad. So sad. Oh my God. Especially the ones that we know and love in Rupert, Dougal. We love and hate Dougal, right? Murta, for the most part, we're still confused on what happens to Murta, but, you know, we'll figure that out one day. The Bonnie Prince, love him, hate him, whatever. Whatevs. Anything, of course, to do with France or even Jamie. I mean, the Jamie that we knew, gone.
Right.
Gone. Even the entire major conflict with Blackjack Randall. Poof. Gone. Dead. Bye.
See you later.
Okay. Then on Claire's side, we see her relationship with Frank cannot work. It will not work. No, no, no. She has to let go of Jamie and Frank.
Right. Which is why I played that first scene from the show at the top of this episode, and why it's the first scene that I think we should be taking a look at here.
Mm-hmm.
Claire says to Frank that she's been terrible to him, and he shushes her, saying that none of it matters. They have each other. They are going to be okay. And you think all is well. Mm-hmm. Letting go of Jamie is something that perhaps that maybe we and she are capable of doing. You see their bliss and you're like, yes, this makes sense.
New baby bliss.
We can do this. Only, of course, to have the entire range of emotion you just felt for both Claire and Frank at the birth of Brianna and any goodwill that the repairing act that they had may have created, only to be subverted and flipped the stakes by bringing in the comment of the red hair.
The red hair. Where's this red hair from?
And this is why this comment, this little sentence, even though it pissed us off in the beginning when we first watched it, this is why it's necessary. Because it's not Jamie that Claire has to let go, although she does. But more specifically, it's her relationship with Frank that she has to let go. Of course, I love the ending. Now, it portends a lot of bad things for my boy Frank. And it leaves the viewer with a clear thesis going forward for the season. I mean, trouble is a brewing, and we're going to have to put everything we thought we knew aside.
Trouble with a capital T.
For what our characters are becoming, to see what they need to be to grow the story.
Okay, so first and foremost, I get it. Not everyone, Blake, loved the additions and changes of Frank throughout this run, especially book readers who knew him in one certain way. And especially, of course, in the season two finale, as well as this episode. Big, big changes. We've already discussed the merits of making Frank a viable character in our breakdown of both sides now. So we're just going to table that discussion. Right, we get it. We've heard it.
Right.
We get it. We've heard it.
Shameless plug. Go listen to our in-depth study of both sides. Now then you'll understand why Frank being a viable character is important.
In the show.
But to understand what I mean as it relates to our emotional attachment to the characters and that transition of values between Claire and Frank and the baby and the red hair and everything, we have to understand that while there are tons of characters in this episode, both in the past and in the present or the future or whatever, and they each get their moment to shine, even in different, as I said, settings, as in times. Everything. It doesn't have to be very complicated. Ron uses, again, that simple tool of writing to keep the story simple and also to exploit the character's emotion, not just ours. And that tool that I've mentioned a couple times now is scene structure.
Okay.
Scene structure.
Huh.
What I mean by that is this. There's this guy, Robert McKee, and he wrote this famous book.
Wicked famous,
wicked good guy. His name's Robert McKee, and he wrote this book called Story. And it explains, we've actually referenced him in this book, Story, many times in these in-depth studies.
Oh my God, he looks so serious. He's got wicked thick brows.
He says that the foundation of any scene is unified around four things: desire, action, conflict, and change. Again, you could apply any of these four basic pillars as a template to any well-written scene in any film or episode of television. But for our purposes right now, let's get to the meat of the battle joined.
Yes, please.
Okay. The climax of the episode, the best example of these four pillars. Again, it is desire, action, conflict, and change. And the climax of the episode happens literally right at the midpoint of the running time of this episode. Claire and Frank fight about their relationship, which culminates in her throwing the ashtray and Frank leaving the apartment, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a powerful scene.
Yeah.
One that I think is actually perfectly written. And it's no coincidence that its simplicity also quickly lays out a vastly different outlook on life for our main characters, and it does so by being defined very easily by our four basic pillars.
Okay, bring
it on. First, we have our expository dump, you know, exposition. It's just getting things out of the way so it gets you up to date as a viewer, right? Our first expository dump, something to get our characters to reminisce or interact. Claire pours milk for Frank in the kitchen for his tea. And one of the funny things is, it's sour.
Ugh, that's gross. It's so gross. She, oh my gosh, this is why I don't like milk. Lactose intolerant.
She sees the bird out the window, reminding her of Jamie, only to be shocked back to reality by Frank talking and about rationing and bacon and the war and the whole thing. And the tea boils on the burner that doesn't work, that she has to constantly keep relighting.
Yes.
All of these things are implying not all is well, from sour milk to rationing to tea boiling and that sound that everybody hates. The whistle.
Oh, I know. I hear it every morning.
And of course, Frank tries to relieve the impending pressure by taking the tea off of the burner. And here we get our first chance to connect despite the obvious tension.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. These are an abomination.
Well, that's how they drink it here.
Mm. It doesn't even smell like tea after weeks of sitting in these little paper diapers.
There is coffee if you'd rather.
I mean, why change something that works perfectly well? Tea in a tin, scoop it out, put it in a pot. Is it really so difficult?
I suppose not.
Now, I'm not sure I'll ever understand the American obsession with the new. Like, everything has to be new, new, new.
Well, that's one of the reasons I like this country. It's young.
Thank you.
It's eager. It's constantly looking towards the future.
So now we have our connection. This is what gets us to it. This is our expository dump. But here comes our first main pillar, the desire for the conversation, which comes into play immediately as Claire tells Frank this.
Now, I've been thinking.
Pass me some toast.
I want toast.
Yes.
Who doesn't want toast?
I'd like to apply for citizenship.
Really?
I've lived all over the world and I've never really had a strong attachment to England. And I want our child to have a real home.
She wants to move on with her life, and she's showing some real affection towards the idea of having a child with Frank.
Yep.
As she calls the future Brianna,
our child.
Which leads to our next pillar, our action. Frank reaches down to touch the big belly of Claire, only as we now know to be famously rebuffed. And Frank telling Claire this.
Since when were you never attached to England? You walk away from your heritage that easily. Hastings and Magna Carta, Drake, Marlborough, the Tudors, Stuarts, the Plantagenets, these are things I fought a war for.
It's just something I want to do.
Well, there's no need. My employment provides us both with residency indefinitely.
Now, this is when things
get awkward.
They turn. And, of course, that leads to our second to last main pillar, conflict. The conflict is now created, but not in the way it seems. It's not necessarily about the citizenship.
No, 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 no.
No, the conversation isn't about that. And they even say that to each other. This is not what this is about, is it? And he goes to touch her hand. He said, no. That's what this is about. But this action and subsequent admission lead to the actual conflict, one that will shape our entire season for the rest of the season between Claire and Frank.
What is it that you want from me?
I want to know when you're going to come back from the fucking past.
You asked me to leave behind everything that truly mattered to me. And yet it's fine for you to go on about the things that you've missed in the good old days. Never talk about the past. That was the bargain. And I've kept that bargain to the letter.
No, the bargain was that we raised this baby together. Our child hasn't even been born yet. And you will not let me in, let alone touch you, God forbid.
And then she continues on, saying, well, is it about sex? Well, I'm sure there's a bunch of girls over there over at Radcliffe that will fall immediately for your British accent. And he gives the one-liner that says, well, I'm not the one effing somebody.
Oh,
bad bad news, right?
Yep.
That's our real issue. There's a disconnect that they cannot overcome. Perhaps it is sex. Perhaps Frank isn't what Claire remembered. Or, and here's the scary part, maybe it's just the unfortunate truth for both of them that Frank simply isn't Jamie.
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay. So, of course, she famously throws the ashtray. Oh, and there
out.
Is a massive, I mean, eternity filled silence between the two of 44 seconds. Okay. 44 seconds. And this is where the exquisite writing from Ron and the incredible acting by Katrina and Tobias comes into play. But 44 freaking seconds is forever in television. Forever. It's incredible how they did this.
Okay. Let's go one up. Okay, let's go even better and top that with the most visually arresting descriptive portion of the argument.
Right.
When Frank leaves. He leaves the house. The camera then cuts to a single shot of Claire in the foreground, and the two characters are separated by literally a wall in the center of the shot. Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful. It highlighted both the physical and the emotional disconnect that is now permanent. So
right.
Claire, of course, attempts to call Frank back, but for whatever reason of her choice, she resists. More right. silence. Just in case you didn't get enough in the 44 seconds previously. And then Frank shuts the door, and really, we realize then that any opening they have to reconcile their relationship, it's now closed too. And right. that is why this episode succeeds so well, because of that patience, that silence that allowed those emotions to resonate.
Right, right. So that emotion is highlighted by the fact that we finally have the real, again, what I've said now, transition of values between Frank mm-hmm. and Claire. I mean, consequently, our result is this. The plot and our characters are fundamentally changed to the core after this encounter. I mean, let's go back to your boy, Robert McKee, right? And his big
my,
famous...
My boy? Well,
he's,
okay,
he's
yeah.
kind of, he's more my boy. But
he's got big eyebrows like me.
Big
so maybe
eyebrows,
he's my
Robert
boy.
McKee, with the Wicked Good Book story. And he says, the understanding of how we create the audience emotional experience begins with the realization that there are only two emotions, pleasure and pain.
How about cozy? I like that idea.
Pleasure being positive.
Oh, I guess it's
pain
positive.
Being negative. Okay.
How about sleep?
And he continues to say, sleep is a good thing.
You're right.
He continues to say, especially when you have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, because you never get it.
I'm just trying to debate my boy, Robert. Robert McBrowse.
He continues saying, an audience experiences an emotion when the telling takes them through a transition of values, like we've talked about. So we have this basic setup here and why these things work so well, because they are written to perfection. And the funny thing is that this is just a small dialogue. It's just a small scene between two people in one room that does have 44 seconds of silence.
So good.
But you know, the funny thing is that it can actually be applied to the favorite part of the episode, of mine. Do you want to know what that is? I know you know what it is.
Tell me.
It's the Battle of Culloden.
Oh, I'm so excited.
But before we do that, we have to take a quick break.
We wanted to remind you, of course, that episode 115 of Outlander Cast is brought to you by Simple Contacts. So I have to tell you, this is my newest time-saving trick. I got my contact lens prescription renewed while sitting on my couch, on my butt, in under 5 minutes using an awesome new app called Simple Contacts. Anyone who wears contact lenses needs to know about this. So get this. Simple Contacts lets you renew your prescription and reorder your brand of lenses from anywhere in minutes through an online vision test. It's designed by doctors and every test is reviewed by a doctor. So they're literally bringing the doctor's office to your home, okay? This is gold if you're a busy person like me. My kids are now out of school. It is summer vacation. I don't have time to take a shower. I don't have time or money for a babysitter. Nonetheless, to drive and go make an eye doctor appointment and sit somewhere and have him do his little doohickey things and all this kind of stuff. And then it takes weeks. I needed contacts now. I need to flip and see, okay? So this is so incredibly great. really, really easy. I'm a huge, huge fan of this service. Blake, what do you think?
I think it's fantastic as well because it saves my sanity because you're saving your sanity.
So the contact lens prices are unbeatable. The vision test is $20. Shipping is free. Best of all, you listeners get $30 off your first simple contacts order with the promo code OutlanderCast. So try it yourself. Save $30 in your lenses. Go to simplecontacts.com/OutlanderCast or enter OutlanderCast at checkout. Really excited. This, of course, PSA, I just to let you guys know, this is not a replacement for your for your regular eye doctor health, okay? You still occasionally need to go see the doctor, but this is just convenient and it's cheap. So I just wanted to let you know. Okay, back to the show.
You know what you need contacts for? Watching the show Outlander more.
Yeah,
again.
I just didn't want people to think that they like never need to see a doctor.
No, you got
to
see a doctor eventually. Like, you, what ifs? All right, let's get back to the show.
Okay.
All right.
The Battle of Culloden.
Now, it comes my favorite part of this episode, which is the Battle of Culloden. And the battle, as told by Outlander, is, I think it's intriguing, and it's an evocative story that is dependent, I think, on the same structure as even the most simple dialogue scene that we just talked about between Frank and Claire, right? It may be a little bit more complicated to shoot. There's going to be more actors. There's going to be weapons. It's going to be more appealing for action seekers or whatever. But its identity can still be boiled down to the four specific pillars.
Oh my God, I'm starting to get bored, but let me try it back up. Okay, we've got desire.
Yep.
Action.
Yep.
Conflict.
Yep.
Changes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm back in it. Bring me back up.
And also how we experience these pillars through a transition of emotional values.
All right.
So let's see how it really simple it is for Culloden.
Oh my
right?
gosh, Culloden is not simple. It's so sad.
Well, when you're talking about scene structure,
okay.
It is.
Bring it down.
Jamie's desire is to beat the British and make the Bonnie Prince the true leader of Scotland.
Yes.
The action he takes is taking a physical role in the battle.
Ah.
The conflict is the actual battle itself.
Easy.
And the change happens when the battle is lost due to ineffective leadership from your boy Bonnie Prince.
Oh my God, he sucks.
And poor battle conditions. As such, of course, the Highland culture is eradicated, essentially, and the rebellion is over. Again, fundamentally changing our characters and plot.
Okay.
But Outlander takes it even further. And this is where I was genuinely surprised for the first time ever, really, by Outlander.
Really?
In its entire run. Really. Honestly.
Something surprised you.
It really did. Ron Moore, the showrunner, lets us experience.
Yeah, we know who Ron is.
Well, some people do and some people don't. It is what it is.
Everyone listening to this knows who Ron is.
Hashtag trust Ron.
Right?
Go buy a shirt at Mary and Blake Swag Store. Hashtag trust Ron. He lets us experience the battle in a non-linear fashion, meaning it's not told from A to B. It's told B to X to A to C to Z. You know, it goes back and forth.
Yeah.
But more specifically, the version of the battle as Jamie remembers it.
We already know. Okay, first and foremost, because we're all like in the future.
Right.
We know that the Highlanders lose.
And he shows it right in the beginning.
Yeah, like he's laying down.
Yep.
Barely breathing with his Adam's apple. We do know from this too right away that Jamie lives.
Right.
We already know that the Highland culture is going to be outlawed. So the battle, the guys fighting, the people dying, all the sadness that we experience of seeing a tattered Scottish flag being thrown on a pile of guns in a cart at the start of the episode. It's important, of course, for context, but it is captured in a relatively familiar fashion. And that, of course, isn't the purpose behind what Ron was trying to accomplish.
Right. Instead of making the action all the things that could be told in a linear fashion,
mm-hmm.
the fighting and the killing and the this and the that and the ba-ba-ba.
Ba-ba-ba.
It's not the centerpiece, which it really could have been, and they would have every right to do, because Culloden was the thing that we've been building towards for 3 years. If they had done this that way, I wouldn't have blamed them. But the choice that they make is that they make Jamie our primary focus. The genius behind that choice is that not only does it look, it's not that it just looks pretty, And it's great to see a uniquely edited bit of action. And of course, name me one more affecting piece of visual storytelling than Jamie flashing to the stones, holding an empty tartan that Claire was just watching, right? And seeing that disbelief on his face.
Rip my heart out.
That person I love just disappeared? What? No. That is nice, but no. The genius behind this choice is allowing Jamie to be the center of our attention for the whole battle. Because when it comes down to brass tacks, what makes memorable battles? Why do we remember battles like Helm's Deep in Lord of the Rings, right? Why do we remember they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom from Braveheart?
You said that like an octave higher.
I did. Why do we remember all those things? Why do we remember Saving Private Ryan? It's because they focus on characters who have multiple transition values throughout the battle in which they are taking part. Multiple times. It's not just the battle. It's not just Jamie's fighting this battle to save Scotland. That is part of it, but there are multiple things, multiple transitions mm-hmm. happening, smaller transitions throughout the battle.
Yeah.
Right? So here in Culloden, right, we follow Jamie as he's let down by the Bonnie Prince Charlie, only to come to the realization that he's going to have to fight and possibly die. Again, only to get pinned down and nearly killed right before Murtaugh comes in and saves him and injects a bit of levity to bring our emotions back up again.
I love Murtaugh. I love him so much.
All of these things are happening. We're going up. We're going down. These are all transitions within a big character scene structure, okay? And as the battle takes place, it's being remixed as Jamie remembers it. And this simple choice adds texture to an already constant maneuvering between emotional highs and lows as Jamie escapes, lives, fights, laughs, remembers, so on and so on and so on. But the coup de grace is not the battle itself or all of these transitions necessarily, but it's the personal fight between Blackjack Randall and Jamie.
Yes.
That is the coup de grace. That is what makes this thing very special.
Yeah, I mean, oh, let's be real. Preston Pants was an outstanding battle to watch. It was moving in so many ways. The fog, it was gorgeous. Even the Battle of the Bastards in Game of Thrones. Epic.
Like incredible.
Seriously. But for my money, this fight between Jamie and Blackjack Randall, anytime, any day, all day, because of the transition of values that we experienced in this very scene.
Right. I'm the same way. I for my money, hands down, it's this one little fight scene. Because once Jamie sees Blackjack Randall on his horse, gone are the wild quick cut shots that we got earlier, that weird blue filter on the camera, and all that traditional crap that we are given in pretty much any battle scene in any of the modern day filmmaking. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice, it's good, it gets to the point, but it's just the same. Instead, when we see Blackjack Randall through the eyes of Jamie, we get a drastic color hue change to red, one of conflict, one of hatred, one of visceral nature. And with a slight head lean and acknowledgement of Jamie from Blackjack Randall, we begin the end of our long-awaited confrontation. Sure, we wanted Culloden to happen because it was mentioned all the time throughout seasons 1 and 2, but it's this confrontation that we've been needing for the characters. No words, just two men who hate each other and have nothing else to say. And we begin our fight like with anyone else would think, swordplay, hand-to-hand combat, and probably even a little bit of taunting from Blackjack Randall.
Yeah.
But here's the real standout. The fight is short and takes a vastly different course than what we expect, and we actually get to the surreal. After Jamie lands a final blow, or a fatal blow to Blackjack Randall, every man around our two combatants, they appear dead. It is only Blackjack and Jamie fighting. Everybody else is laying down. The battle has stopped. Of course, it's not really happening, but it's happening in our case for Jamie. Because remember, we're looking at this battle through Jamie's eyes. It's surreal. It's a hyper-focused moment for Jamie. And his focus, only focus, is on Black Jack Randall. It's only them two, nobody else. So Black Jack Randall swipes a few times, as does Jamie, but they do not battle to the bitter end like we all expect.
No.
In the bravest of most brave artistic choices I think Outlander has made, Black Jack Randall uses his final moments to reach out and touch Jamie.
Oh my God, those fingertips.
With a sense of affection. It results in what I consider to be, again, probably the most memorable moment Outlander has ever put to paper.
What?
It is.
Put to paper?
Yeah.
You know
nothing. Or put on the screen. Really, so far.
Oh, okay. No, I thought you were like, because paper, I think, of the book.
Well, okay. I was thinking script. Whatever. Either way, I think it's the most memorable moment Outlander has given us.
For you.
For me.
Okay.
These two mortal and bitter enemies, the things that we've seen happen between the two, are wild. These two guys embrace.
So awkward.
In an odd sense of compassion and release. So why am I saying all this?
Compassion. No.
No, that's what it felt like to me. It felt like, oh my God, this has happened. Like, regardless, they embrace. And I come back to Star Wars, actually, in this part. Because like when Kylo Ren flicks his fingers in The Last Jedi, completely changing the landscape of Star Wars for the rest of time.
Okay.
This sequence with Blackjack also is nothing short of breathtaking in the same way.
Okay.
And here's where I'm reminded of Star Wars The Last Jedi again. Because while filming the movie, Rian Johnson, the director of Star Wars, approached Mark Hamill, the guy who plays Luke Skywalker. Because Mark wasn't sure about his character motivations and where the story was going.
You know, but we really have to think of what the audience expects and what they want. And he says, no, we have to do the opposite. We have to give them something they don't expect that we want.
That was Mark Hamill talking about his filmmaking experience with Rian Johnson. Mm-hmm. We need to give the audience something that they don't expect that we want to give them. And this is exactly what Ron does. It gives us a resolution that we don't expect between the two men embracing, but it's the absolute right choice for the story. And this is why I was genuinely surprised for the first time. Between this fight and, of course, the subsequent quiet and touching vision of Claire coming to comfort Jamie as he lay dying, it's a wholly unique and radical experience we as an audience require to close the arc, but also need because it forces us to let go of everything we liked about the show in the past so we can finally move forward. Black Jack Randall, gone.
Bye.
Claire and Jamie as we knew them, a vision that we can only look back on with affection.
Okay, but there are plenty of other instances in The Battle Joined where our structure plays a role in evoking emotion from us, hashtag all the feels. Like Frank lying on a couch, angry, alone, perhaps a little scared, listening to that fan rotate and rotate and rotate, or the water drip, only to abruptly succumb to his own good-natured love of Claire and request Reverend Wakefield's help in searching for Jamie Fraser.
Right. Or in that brilliant and visceral scene where gunshots violently rip apart the silence of Rupert's confession that while he isn't forgiving Jamie for killing Dougal, he won't go to his grave angry either. Mm-hmm. Only to have him make jokes about snoring and farting and doing all this other stuff. They're laughing with each other. And then, more importantly, he makes the quip to the British that he means to keep a quick pace to his death.
Oh.
These things are all transition of values. These are all an exercise in emotion. These are all ways that are meant to play on emotion, both intentionally and, I think, directly, right? Or in even indirectly. All of these things are Ron's purpose for this episode. Let go of what has come before so we can go forward and get back to our and push our story in a direction that we didn't necessarily see happening, which of course is what happened for the
hashtag
rest of season 3.
Season 3 be cray cray.
Season 3 was crazy. Listen, Outlander is many things. Subtle is not one of them.
You know, it is just so funny when you talk about this episode and you really dive deep into this episode and you rewatch it like we did and we got to get deep in all these emotions and the conflict. And then you think about everything else that happened this episode. And it was this season.
Right.
It was just a wild ride.
It was a wild ride. I mean, we're talking about speaking to coconuts,
yeah,
you know, yep. and the blood baths.
Boston cream pies.
And right? And those things, they all have their merit, and I'm not going to put them down.
I agree.
There's a purpose and there's a reason for them, but this is why...
This one was so special.
This is why, and why the reason why we just talked about it is why, you're right, my love, it is so special, because it is written expertly.
Written for emotions.
It's written expertly,
yes.
This entire thing. I would say, if you wanted me to be real nitpicky about it, I would say that Claire's struggle with her role in the future is a little on the nose, especially with the doctors and how she's giving birth, and they keep pushing her out of the way. They're only talking to Frank. Or when she's talking.
What do you mean on the nose?
It's a bit on the nose. Like, it's like, we have an agenda, we're obviously pushing it. And they push it down your throat a lot between the doctors, the neighbor who goes to help her, and
I liked it because Claire's a strong, independent woman. It just showed you that she doesn't even fit in her own time.
And that's actually what I was just about to say, because remember how I said that she throws the ashtray at Frank?
Yes.
One of my favorite lines from this episode is when the doctor walks away after he's been speaking to Frank, and you can tell that Claire is obviously pissed. And Frank says to her in a funny way, "Hey, just make sure you don't throw an ashtray at him too." And they both laugh with each other.
Yes.
It's a reparative act between the two.
Repair attempt.
A repair attempt.
I got you.
Very, very special. Great writing. Now, yes. Again, is it a tad on the nose? Sure.
I'm down with
it. But I'm okay with it because it finally comes back to an action that they both took.
Yes.
And something that propelled the story forward. So this is why, in my opinion, The Battle Joined, it has everything. It checks off all the boxes that you need for Outlander. The magic and the love and the battle and the funny and everything. And then you know what it does with that list, that the checkbox list?
What?
It tears the whole freaking thing up and throws it out the window and says, "Screw you. Yeah, I did it, but F you, I'm moving on to the next best thing." And which is why, again, it's also a perfect episode for television in general,
yes,
in my opinion, and why I truly love it, and why I really think that it was the best episode of Outlander for season 3. I know we talked about our season rankings last episode, my love. Do you put The Battle Joined in the same category that I do? Do you think?
Or if
your answer has changed, I think First Wife maybe was your best choice.
I love this episode. You know me. I was all about all the fives. I was like,
five for everybody.
Love you all. I love this episode. I love this episode.
Right.
The only thing I couldn't get over was the dang Adam's apple. I mean, aside from that, just because I kept wanting to touch my own throat, I love this episode.
All right.
All the feels.
You ready to close this bad boy out?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's give it a shot.
As always, we want to thank you for listening to this episode. We want to welcome you to our exclusive Facebook community, the Outlander Cast Clan Gathering. And if you're a book reader, head on over to the Outlander Cast Clan Book Club. There you can talk Drums of Autumn and beyond. Now, of course, this episode has been made possible by listener support, especially thanks to our patrons. And I want to give a huge shout out to some of our highest level patrons. We have Peg, Anne, and Bobby, Liz, Tina, Carolyn, Sharon, Tracy, Lisa, Meredith, Sue, Keelan, Dana, Mary, Michelle, Jennifer, Heather, and Marilyn, and many more. Thank you all
so much
for being podcast and blog patrons of OutlanderCast. I know the struggle in Droughtlander is real, guys. We are right here with you, but we are promising you, we've got the wheels a-turning, things are moving, and we are going to keep you company here in Droughtlander. We've got some fun new episodes up in store for the rest of the summer.
And I'll even say this, too. If you like these in-depth studies, and you liked the one for Sassenach, you liked the one for Both Sides Now, and hopefully you liked the one for The Battle Join, please let us know via email or Facebook or whatever, so that we can keep doing them. And if you think they suck, just tell me to stop and we'll stop doing it. Otherwise, I'm gonna keep doing it.
Oh my goodness gracious, I love you dearly. So seriously, thank you so much. And of course, if you're heading on to iTunes, if you haven't yet, left us a written review on iTunes, I would love for you to. Want to give a huge shout out to Morgan A.C. Bennett. Said OutlanderCast hits every mark just right. Mary and Blake balance each other so well, and their commitment to providing quality content every episode is what makes this podcast so valuable. Whether you're watching Outlander for the first or the fifth time, each episode holds up and enhances the viewing experience. OutlanderCast was one of the first podcasts I ever listened to, and I'm so thankful that I stumbled on this one first.
Hi-yo!
Thanks, Morgan.
Thank you
so incredibly much. So if you haven't yet left a written review, please do. Please join the clan gathering. Blake and I are going to be going to a couple events in the near future of this year in regards to Outlander, so we would love to see you.
And another thing I would like you to do, too, obviously, of course, go to OutlanderCast.com and check out all of the great blogs and articles that we have there, as well as the rest of our podcasts. But I also want you to go to MaryandBlake.com. We have another podcast that we are actively doing right now. It's called This Is Us Too. It's about the show This Is Us on NBC. We are new to the show. We are living all the moments. So if you have watched This Is Us before, relive all of those great moments with us as we podcast about it and get up to date as soon as season 3 premieres. So I think we're almost done with season 1 right now. We're going to be moving on to season 2 relatively soon.
That's true.
So,
okay, guys, I miss you. We're here. I promise you we're here. We're coming back full force. To be candid, we've had some health issues in our family. We're working on that, so we appreciate your patience in these podcast episodes. Mm-hmm. And we're coming back at you. So until next time, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
And you've been listening to OutlanderCast.